Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd. This is the Chuck Todd Cast. After former Miami Dolphins coach Brian Flores, one of only two black coaches in the NFL at the time, was fired this year and then sued the league for discrimination, football's race problem once again burst back into the open. This week on Meet the Press Reports, we took a look at how America's most popular sport got to this point again, why past attempts at reform have failed again, and how other sports have successfully tackled inequality, or at least done it a lot better than the NFL, and frankly, football as a whole. My guest today is Jane Costin. She's the host of The Argument. It's the New York Times podcast about politics, culture, and yeah, sometimes sports. Jane, I used to say that on Twitter feed. I do politics and sometimes sports. So welcome to a sometimes sports podcast.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with why we should care so much about sports equality. And I say this, we were having a conversation before, and I want to like get back, you know, I'm mostly a political reporter. You're mostly a political commentator. But both of us view the sports as an important symbol of, I guess, of where we could be politically.
Right. And I think that sports, again, often features the stories we tell ourselves and the stories we don't want to tell ourselves. And I think that that's why, in some ways, the issues of race and equality are so pertinent in sports, in which you are seeing people, sports is a moment in which sometimes like the context is removed and what you see is even more true. And so I'll give you an example. There are hosts of reasons that people give for racial inequality in every facet of our lives. Mm-hmm. And you hear this when we're talking about affirmative action in schools and higher education. And people want to add all this context about like, well, it's actually not about race. It's about these like specific achievement markers. But then when you're looking in sports, you are looking at people who have all done the exact same thing. And especially in sports that are purportedly objective, where the goal is, you don't have to do it prettily. The goal is to score. And then you are asking people who are all like the very best at what they do, you are somehow implying that, yes, they're all the very best at what they do, but there must be this hidden context as to why this person has a head coaching job and this person doesn't have a head coaching job. And it just is like, it beggars belief. Because again, you are saying something about, you are making the subtext text. The right. Subtext that we see in so much of our lives is made text in sports, in which you are like, I brought up in the episode today, in which if you are attempting to hire Josh McCown to be the, head coach of a football team when he's still an active quarterback.
For those not following, this was a backup quarterback.
Yes.
Somebody who had given up being a starter decades ago was basically a career backup, which is a great living in the NFL.
It's a fantastic. And there were people still talking like, oh, we can get him off waivers. He could go to the Jaguars or something.
And he's known as a good sort of coach.
He coaches his kids' high school team.
He's a good clipboard holder. There's no doubt.
And because he happened to have a friend within the Texans organization, a friend who I think he was the chaplain at another team and got brought over to the Texans to do something, because that's what you can do when you own a sports franchise. You invent a position and put somebody in it. Their friendship was so strong that, according to Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio, they were trying to pressure other organizations to interview Josh McCown so it wouldn't look weird when they hired him. They did not wind up hiring him, mercifully for everyone involved. But I think that was a moment, and I've written about this, like, you have, on the one hand, you could hire someone like Jim Caldwell, who got multiple winning seasons.
Baseball and basketball have done this.
Right.
By the way, where players have become the player coach.
Right.
In fairness. It has happened more often in baseball and football.
It has never happened in the NFL.
No.
And I think that, like, even if it were, the closest I could imagine is that you would somehow get Josh McCown like a college job doing something. Mm-hmm. Then you could make the Cliff Kingsbury, like, he did something. He had an interesting offensive strategy. I don't know. But I think that they made the subtext text there where they were like, no, we're going to push out a coach who is doing the absolute best at what they can with a horrifying team. The Texans were horrifyingly bad, kind of on purpose, because it was kind of their like, let's tank it year. But then you have, you're asking.
And this is where I feel sorry for Lovie Smith.
Right.
Do we think Lovie Smith, and this was the conversation with Hugh Jackson, where I think, you know, I think Hugh got over his skis about comparing himself being paid to lose. I don't think he was being paid to lose, but he did feel as if he was hired to not win.
Right.
And I think that Steve Wilks at the Arizona Cardinals, that's why he signed onto this. He was hired not to win.
Right. And I think that there have been allegations made by numerous black coaches of essentially being like, with the Dolphins, for example. And, you know, these allegations, we don't know their veracity, but I think that when you have these coaches, again, that's what the lack of diversity does, is that it puts coaches like Lovie Smith, who's been coaching for a million years. He got Illinois to be okay. Like, these are people who have a depth and breadth of experience. And now you're putting them in an almost impossible position. But I want to back up for a second, because I think that, again, these issues, they're about sports, but they're also not about sports, because nothing is ever just about sports. I think that sports can be a really good way of talking about issues that we don't want to talk about in other places. You know, you can ask questions of people that they don't want to be asked in other places, where you can essentially say, are you really telling me that Josh McCown is the best possible option
here? Well, let's talk about that. What that gets at is, we talk about the old boys club.
Right.
We talk about it in politics. We can talk about it in Hollywood. We could talk about it. It's, I guess, in the tech world, it would be the young boys club.
They're not youngish, as old. Yeah.
Right. But it's the same thing. It's right. Sort of the frat boy culture of Silicon Valley. So in some ways, sports, we see it, and they get away with it, right? I think about, how does a high school coach get a job in college? They basically bring a player for a recruit. Mm-hmm. How does, you know, we know that everything is a transaction. Everything's right. A network. None of it is done on the up and up.
No.
And football is probably worse at this than any other sport.
Right. And it always has been. And it's interesting because people seem to want to wax rhapsodic about when it was even more so. And I think that's why I love college football. I'm a college football fan. I think I've watched more college football than most people ever should in their lives. But it is interesting to me how people think about college football, and they're able to hold these two images of college football in their heads, which is, one, this version of the, you know, the heralded student athlete who goes to ye olde alma mater to study astrophysics and play football on the side. But then they are also well aware that there is a system in which, you know, the person who brings in a lot of recruits from the specific area just happens to get a job at the university.
Right.
And you want those big time recruits. And if those big time recruits happen to get something out of it, which is why I'm so glad that we've gotten to NIL legislation now, because right. Now we can make like the lack of that was hurting was the recruits, not the bag men. The bag men were fine the whole time. But I think that the way in which we think about football, especially, and you get to the NFL, you think about these, you know, you don't become an NFL owner because you're good at being an NFL owner. If that was required, there'd be like 10 franchises right. left. And so the role that ownership plays, and I'm really glad we got to talk about that a little bit today, is so important here, because you can make all of the alleged meritocracy arguments you want in about coaching stuff, yep. about people who have worked their way up. But when you know that at any point Shad Khan can be like, let's hire Urban Meyer, it'll be fun. And it'll work because the owners have the power. And Roger Goodell knows the owners have the power, which mm-hmm. is why Roger Goodell has been the commissioner for as long as he right. has.
I will challenge you in college football watching. And I will accept the challenge to see if you've watched more or if I've watched more.
Okay.
Because I'm with you. It's my favorite sport. And it's always been – I inadvertently got an early lesson in the racism of college football and didn't fully view it that way. Grew up – I'm a huge University of Miami fan. Grew up with those teams of the 70s and 80s. And I took it as an anti-Miami bias, the way the rest of college football hated Miami. Okay.
Yeah.
Catholics versus convicts.
Oh, and all the way of these that was portrayed, and if you go back to
it's one of those, as
Miami
an adult,
versus Penn State, like now it's just like, it's so obvious.
Yes. And it was one of those things where at the time I just like, God, what is college? Oh, it's just the, you know, and even my father would say it's the old boys club, but that's all he would say. It didn't fully attribute it to race at the time. And Catholics versus convicts, my hatred of Notre Dame is visceral, not for on the field stuff. For that.
Right.
It's the single most racist thing they did. And I appreciate the person who made the 30 for 30 because they finally addressed this. I always thought that what Miami did is Miami brought urban black America into college sports.
Right.
And the college football white world hated that.
Right. And especially because the athletes at Miami did exactly what they were supposed to do. They were the best at it and they had fun doing it.
They had fun.
They
had
a great time.
How dare you have fun?
How dare you appear to be having a good time? Especially, how dare you appear to be having a good time in Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, yeah, of course you were. And it's, you know, it's interesting now how if you are a college football player, you are in this very strange position in which you are, in some respects, it's funny now when I go back and they're talking about recruits and I'm like, what year were you born? Which,
yeah.
It gets worse every year. But then at the same time,
because you don't think you age, do you?
No,
right,
no. They just keep like the years. Yeah. They're just like class of 20. What?
Yeah.
Like that just keeps shifting. But it is interesting.
Try working with a staff that is now literally I'm old enough to be all of their fathers.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. And it's funny though, because you see in college football players in which they're like this. You know, the Miami players were viewed as this like terrifying menace because they were having a good time playing sports. And even it's funny when you go back.
Well, they had black stars.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the reason
why.
Warren Sapp, Jerome Brown, these guys were stars. They'd be revered today.
Right, exactly.
And especially time, they got demonized.
Especially because in many respects, what the NCAA violations that were against them or against like the Fab Five at Michigan or against any of these, but were things that any college student would do and now would be under NIL, like obviously with some program, like would be largely permissible. Because it's like, you know, the idea of being a college football player is that, oh, you know, you're reaping all the benefits of college, but you're also not reaping all the benefits of college because you have a full-time job.
Let me connect this back to our NFL race problem. Is it possible that NIL might be a magic elixir here? And I say this in that it player empowerment is coming to is actually it is there's more player empowerment in college football right now than there is in pro football.
Right.
And what I think that does is will condition the players to believing they should have the power that they had in college to sign their own deals or move franchises.
Right.
In this case, okay, schools. You want to call them schools, I'll call them franchises.
Essentially.
They want that in the NFL.
Yeah. And I think that what's really going to be interesting, and again, this is in part a labor issue. And part of the issue that the NFL has had is, one, they're the only game in town. If you're a college athlete and you have like an awful time at Tennessee because of the transfer portal, you could be like, someone at USC could be like, come out west. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful here. And you're like, fantastic. And you can make this work for you. You cannot do that in the NFL. Your contract is not guaranteed. It's interesting because it's injury guaranteed, but if they want to cut you, they'll cut you. They don't care if they made a four-year deal for you. 4 years means nothing.
Yeah.
And I think that part of this, again, is because the NFL Players Association has been historically weak. It just is. It's a weak organizing mechanism right now. And so every year when the NFL announce that we've renewed the CBA, they're all so happy. And you look at the standards for the CBA, and what has changed has only been at what people have yelled at the NFL enough about.
Yeah.
So on the concussions issue, on the issues facing retired players, they've got their legacy fund that's supposed to provide health care for retired players, which only came after the deaths of number of players. And so I think that's the funny thing about this is because you're going to have a lot of college players who have even some with actual unionization experience, what we saw at Northwestern.
Right.
And then they go to the NFL and they go to organizations in which it is far more strict in the NFL. And especially like what you are empowered to do and say, especially because they know their careers are short. So you're asking I think that there's always like, you know, why is there no Kurt Flood of the NFL? And I'm like, let's remember that Kurt, like, that is sacrificing your career for the careers of future generations. And that's what I keep thinking about. Like, why has no one pushed back against the questions they get asked at the combine? Why has no, like, why have these things not happened? It's like, because you are asking people who have worked their entire lives to be able to provide for not just their families, but in many cases, their entire communities.
Yep.
There are people for whom it's just like, just keep your mouth shut. You get to the NFL and then you can speak out on some issues, but not other issues. But your career is so, I had a great conversation with fellow Miami fan, Kevin Clark at The Ringer, where we talked about how it's not even just about getting drafted. It's about where you're drafted. Geography is destiny in the NFL. Yeah. And so like, if you're amazing and you get drafted by the Jets, your career is going to be very different than what it could have been if you were drafted by a different franchise that cared and wanted to try. Right. And so
never mind marketing power, never mind any of that.
And so I think that I am very hopeful that the organization that college players have shown, and especially because that pressure does work, when you are seeing college players who feel as if
they— Look what the coaches did. Yeah. I found it fascinating to watch all of the coaches all of a sudden endorse the players on NIL everywhere. Yeah. I mean, in the state of Florida, I watched, you know, it was Miami's coach that went first, and literally the Florida coach in Florida say, no, we're in favor too, because nobody wants a recruiting disadvantage.
No, and you don't want that. And the only person—
They use their leverage.
And even
recruiting
the people—
Recruiting was their leverage.
Yeah, especially they use the leverage that they have, and the coaches that aren't willing to do that will. You know, you've heard Nick Saban essentially be like, well, I guess if that's what we're going to do, that's what we're going to do, which I'm like, oh, he's about to launch like a missile launcher at all of you.
Look, I understand why the two biggest complainers are Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban. And it's like, there's part of me goes, of course you two are complaining because the system's about to get shaken up again.
Right. And at least Saban, you get the sense of he's like, oh, you want to play with money? Yeah. You want to play with NIL money? Because they've got it. Like, they can do this. And
although my Bitcoin supporters down in Miami, these Bitcoin billionaires think, hey, Miami versus Tuscaloosa will win that argument every day.
Right. But even on just like cultural issues, you are seeing, you're seeing coaches who are, it's not at, college football is in this very weird space in which it is a very hierarchical organization. But at the same time, you are seeing coaches being more responsive to players than I think it has ever been. And part of that is because of external pressure. And part of that is just because players are aware that they can be recruited. You will do anything for a five-star recruit. So why don't you speak out?
Yeah. Look what he's pulling off at Jackson State.
Yeah, exactly.
He's using the NIL to his advantage here.
Right, exactly. And you are, you know, when you hear him talking about like, this is, we're doing this for HBCUs, we're doing this at like, there's no reason why this can't happen. That's the other thing I think that's fascinating to me about college football is that we think all the time about like these dynasties in college football, but dynasties aren't forever and they aren't determined. Mm-hmm. Any school, hypothetically, that is willing to pay, I mean, it's going to take an incredible amount of money and an incredible amount
college
of
college basketball shows it to you all the time.
Right.
Gonzaga, exactly. UNLV, I could come up where they literally programs out of nowhere, Butler.
Yeah.
You know, they just decided to spend a bunch of money.
Right. They spent a bunch of money.
Some might say I'm not on the up and up.
Right.
Jerry Tarkanian.
Right. But if you are willing to spend the money and you are willing to get in line, which is what happened at Alabama. My good friend Spencer Hall is a college football writer. He's talked a lot about how what happened at Alabama is they were like, line up behind Nick Saban and we're all going to be fine. And that's what they did. And if you are willing to do so, you can develop programs that win in a lot of different places. Now, how long that'll take, we'll see. And college football is also weird because, again, it's a sport and college players are children. But I think that what we see in the NFL is that we still see there is no – if you are a bad NFL owner, there is virtually no punishment for you.
Well, we're finding out. The Washington Commanders. We are going to find out what is the line. What does it take? What is the Donald Sterling line? We know at the NBA.
Yeah.
We have the Donald Sterling line.
And that required a tape.
Yes.
With the Commanders, that is a moment I think I tweeted about this, talking about how like if you are taking money that is intended for other NFL owners, I think that's your Layla in Goodfellas moment where it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. You did what? No. No. Like, right. That's too much.
The cheerleading story was bad. This story's bad. Whoa, you took money from me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't mess with the money.
This is suddenly Jerry Jones is not on your side
no,
anymore.
No.
Let me pause there. We'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to the Chuck Todd Cast from Meet the Press.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The question I have, though, is can one owner make a difference? I don't know if they can. I mean, I really would like to see, you know, if the NFL cared a lot about this issue, even if they cared about it cosmetically, they'd do everything they can to get Robert Smith into this league.
Right. And
I think he's the only one with the cash to pull this off right now. Out there.
I think that, I mean, this is what the NFL does, is that the NFL will slow walk this. The NFL will get it to the point they are at a level of profitability they've never seen before. They are making money hand over fist because, and in their view, it's because of the things the NFL has done to make the NFL more watchable.
Please. It's because our industry is fragmented and we're all desperate for, every one of our bosses is so desperate for eyeballs that they're overpaying for eyeballs to the NFL.
Right. And you see, like, there are tons of games. There are the quality of games, depending on what you think of that, because they believe, the NFL firmly believes that the rule changes that they have made are why more people are watching football. I have no idea if that's actually true, but, you know.
Scoring, I mean, yeah, it looks,
scoring's gone up.
Scoring's up. And look, I will give them this on safety. The fact that somebody 5'10 thinks they can be a wide receiver in the NFL today.
Yeah.
They couldn't do that 20 years ago because of the way the rules were in the middle of the field.
It used to be that if you were running crossing patterns, you were just taking your life in your hands.
Correct.
And I will say that, like,
that, rules they did on, take it out. They've taken
rules
that out
on
of the
hitting
game.
Defenseless procedure. I'm like, that's totally fine. I understand what you're trying, especially if you are attempting to preserve.
Cooper Kupp wouldn't have a job in the NFL today.
No, no.
With the old rules.
And so I think, though, that, like, there is no means by which to possibly pressure owners into doing anything, because I've made this point, and I think Kevin Clark has made this point, that if you're an NFL owner, you're going to make money no matter what it is you do. If you put out an inferior product, that's fine. Like, there are only
It's like living in a communist society and being an oligarch.
Right.
Because
you're part of the nomenclatura. You'll always be able to get Levi's.
The NFL is a total, closed.
It's a closed system. And so you'll get, you know, if you're awful, you have to be, I mean, I keep thinking about this. Like, if you are quietly awful, you can keep going forever. The issue is that we've had numerous terrible coaches or something like that where they also talk too much and then maybe kicked a field goal kicker. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. But, like, the way in which the NFL works right now, if you're just quietly bad and cheap, like, you know, you saw that
you
with Cincinnati.
You grew up in Cincinnati. Yeah. Speaking of cheap
this
owners.
this is actually all about my feelings regarding the Cincinnati Bengals,
Who have been better on this issue. They had Marvin Lewis and they didn't give up on him the way other teams might have.
Right. And then you heard from Marvin Lewis talking about how, like, when he's gone for other jobs, like, he's gone to interview for other jobs and he essentially already knows that he does not have the job. He's just there for Rooney Rule purposes. And so I think, though, that, like, that's the incentive in any other business, the incentive would be do this to compete, do this to be better, do this because otherwise you will get fired. If you own the Giants or the Jets or any number of franchises, like, what's your incentive? It's like people will keep coming out for something. You can just essentially just, you know, maybe you'll do well in the draft and that'll get people back in. But it's
two crazy ideas and then we'll go and how feasible. One would be, what if the NFL didn't allow owners to pass the teams on when they died? What if the minute you died, the team went up for sale, period? That doesn't mean the son or the daughter couldn't bid on the team, but that it shouldn't automate, you know, sort of a
can't just have the family football team.
I mean, look at what do we have? A third of the league is basically
dynastic.
derivatives of founders. I mean, the Bears, your Bengals, essentially, you know, with Mike Brown, who's still, you know, you could argue with a loose tie to the Browns, right?
Yeah.
You know, the Rooney family.
I would be
the
so
Maras.
I would be so fascinated to see that, especially because how the NFL talks,
Ursay,
how
Davis.
The NFL talks about owners is very strange. It's very much like the
no
way
more owners boxes make them sit in the stands.
Yeah, make them sit. Make
Mark
them,
Cuban sits in the stands.
Yeah, make them deal with what they have wrought. You have to sit next to the guy who's wearing a paper bag, who's gone to every single game for the last 30 years and hates you.
The Ford family. We could keep going here.
I will say the Detroit Lions, the only example I've ever seen of people actually leading a real protest to get rid of general manager Matt Millen, and it worked. That's the only time I've ever seen that, but I would personally love to see if that happens.
All right. The other is probably a more realistic metric system that I've heard proposed, which simply is if you have had, Phil, a head coach opening three straight times with a white candidate and you don't hire after three straight openings, which could be for the Steelers over a 30-year period.
Right.
Because they you lose draft picks.
Yeah. I think, though, that the issue is that so much of this has been punishments that are NFL-derived. Because the NFL, again, it's a closed system.
Right. They so have the to NFL, do it. It doesn't matter what you and I say.
Right. Yeah. The NFL, like, that's the same thing with punishing teams that ask bigoted
could be part of the collective bargaining agreement if the players chose to make it a part of it.
Oh, if the NFL Players Association chose to make any argument that I have, I would – the thing is I've met some union representatives from the NFL Players Association. They are great people. They are in a very challenging position, and I wish they would do more. I understand why they don't. But I would – it is interesting how much of this is the NFL. The NFL is so big and so dominant that essentially they just keep being like, oh, you know, we'll deal with this. And, you know, if you ask bigoted questions, that's a $150,000 fine. And it's like, do you think the Miami Dolphins really care about $150,000? Like, I mean, right now we're hearing that maybe the Commanders might care about $150,000.
Turns out they do, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Like – but I do think that so much of this has to do with the closed system that is the NFL.
One of the best political scandals we had in the early 90s was members of Congress stealing postage stamps. So it's amazing what people will do.
I know.
It's always
the last grift. It's just like the last one. It's, you know, it's like Goodfellas. You bought a fur coat for your wife. You put the car under her mother's name.
What,
like,
are you doing?
Why?
Right. Jane, I got to we got to figure out how to make college football relevant enough to podcast together.
I'm
a fellow
horrified.
Traveler on college football. I worry about the long-term future of the college game, and yet I know Miami's going to benefit. So I'm in this weird, Miami's going to benefit from these new rules more than most schools.
I've actually had conversations with, I've had conversations with people where they're just like, we're not sure how long this is going to go. And yet it's like, we're going to watch every single down.
Look at the Tennessee kid, this $8 million guy.
Yeah, like, which at a certain point, we're starting to get into that crazy zone. Like, do you remember, like, there's do you remember when Lane Kiffin, when he was at USC, he offered a 13-year-old?
Yeah.
And you're just like, there's going to be, like, a light bit of lunacy.
Well, I do believe we're headed to contracts. Meaning, so while a university won't sign a 4-year contract with a player, his NIL deal might say you only get paid if you, for every year you're at school X.
Right.
So I do think that's an inevitable next step.
Yeah, especially because I think that it's worth also noting that so far the NIL deals that most people have gotten in college sports have been very small.
Yep.
And so, like, if you're like a volleyball player at Stanford and you get an NIL deal, it's not $8 million. I love the ones, especially that are very regional specific. For instance, I believe there's like a barbecue place in Arkansas that was like, we offered deals to the entire Arkansas offensive line. And I'm like, of course you did. Right. I'm so happy.
I do love that it really is about creating your own personality if you want to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
And in some ways, some of the non-revenue sports, that's where the athletes might make a couple
points. Yeah, and that's what you're seeing the numbers coming in, where it's just like the best NIL performers are players on
hustlers,
like basketball teams or people with big Instagram presences already.
People that just hustle.
Yeah.
Speaking of hustle, it's like Jane Costin.
That's what I try to do.
I was just going to say, you're here today because you hustled your way.
I did.
On a second job.
I did.
It's a great story. You did not know you were going to become a sports columnist, did you?
No.
Or what would you call yourself?
I am a podcaster and a writer. And I think that because I write about so many different things, like I'm deeply interested in like, I joke online that I'm very into like dad things, like the Second World War, tanks, football, falling asleep while watching football. I'm very interested in like the dad
spectrum. Have you gotten to dad humor? Have you gotten to dad humor?
Yes. I also like Steely Dan. Yeah. I'm really like,
wow.
Yeah. I have a deep dad lifestyle.
I have a very bad Steely Dan memory from college. That just triggers so many terrible memories. And I can't share it on this. That is a not safe for work.
Okay.
Jane, thanks.
Absolutely.
You got it. You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Isabel Schmeller, Alexis Saunders, and Matt Rivera. The theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock or on YouTube. And the big show is available every Sunday morning wherever you get your NBC program. Thanks for listening, and until we upload.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.